What are some of the biggest challenges you face as being a new entrepreneur in this new operation you're running? What are some of the how has the market shifted from the first company you ran to this one you're doing now? What are some of the big challenges you face?
I talk about this all the time with my business partner. Things are so much harder now than they were 13 years ago for marketing and sales. I mean, it was so easy because we were at a time in our transition as a human population where social media was just getting really, really popular for businesses and leaving radio. So businesses that would advertise on radio were looking for a new place because Spotify was coming out and Apple Music wasn't out yet, but people were just listening to music on their devices rather than radio. And so getting clients and selling was so much easier. Now, so much more effort has to be put on this and having a personal brand and talking about yourself and talking about you as an expert and less emphasis on just your company. You need to have your company brand and your personal brand, and they need to be united in some way. And so I feel like I'm talking about myself more than I've ever been comfortable with.
Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Branding Laboratory, where we strip away the fluff and we dive into the real raw conversations with entrepreneurs and CEOs. This is not just another branding or business podcast. It's a no BS exploration of what makes brands tick, the challenges leaders face, and the real stories that shape their success or failures or things that they've learned along the way. And we're going to have some raw and candid conversations with them so that we as other business leaders and entrepreneurs can learn from them. I'm your host, Devo, the Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller. I am a master photographer, brand strategist, and serial entrepreneur myself, and my mission is to help other leaders and small business owners cut through the noise, tell their authentic story, and build brands that truly connect and resonate with their audience. And when I say authentic, I mean creating an experience for their ideal buyer that has soul, that has vision, that has purpose, that has meaning, so that it resonates with both sides, both the client and the purveyor. And today we're going to dig into some scalable branding and marketing systems that align with how we systematize what we do and how important it is to build systems where we can build systems and automate things where we can automate things. And I'm not saying go AI, I'm saying automate things that really enable you to streamline your production of everything. So we're going to talk about that with our guest. She'll be joining here in a second. And her name is Elaine Boyd, and she is the co-founder of Workday Ninja and Arvo. And she's a powerhouse when it comes to modernizing businesses and their processes and creating digital tools that help organizations execute more flawlessly, more consistently, and in alignment with what the brand's vision is. So welcome to the Branding Laboratory, Elaine. Let's jump right in. My guest today is Elaine Boyd. She is the co-founder of, is that right, co-founder, or are you the origin woman, single boss?
Co-founder, yeah, Workday Ninja.
Of Workday Ninja and Arvo. Those are two separate companies that kind of work hand in hand?
They're both together, but one's a software platform and the Workday Ninja side is our services side.
All right, we're going to dive into both of those in a second. But your core competency, your value, at least when I'm reading on paper, is helping businesses modernize, systematize their operational processes and things of that nature. Is that pretty much fair assessment there?
Yeah, you nailed it.
But still remaining true, because a lot of times, and I think especially as entrepreneurs, if I may be so bold, because I had somebody who came in here many years ago and tried to modernize me, and it turned up taking me backwards a few years, just because she introduced stuff that wasn't in alignment with what my business did. And the systemization of it actually ended up kind of corrupting some of my relationships with my clients because of the things that were sort of just going out without any personalized experiential touch to them. So from what I'm reading about you, you keep things in alignment with what the business core values are, their missions, et cetera, while taking the minutiae and modernizing that and systematizing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Taking those tedious parts out of the day-to-day, making it a little bit easier, and then just creating consistency in the org, because you might have a certain way of working with clients, but then you have another account manager on your team that has a whole different way, but what's the company way? And so that's what we try to get out of working with our clients, is like, hey, what do you want your way to be? And let's have a process in place so everybody does it functionally the same way.
I like it. Well, I think we're going to have some fun with this conversation, Elaine. And one of the things that I think is near and dear to my heart as a branding coach is that making sure that people, whether you're a solopreneur, an entrepreneur, or you're a team-based organization, that everybody is sort of on board with what it is you're trying to accomplish, right? Why are you here in the first place? Mm-hmm. What's the value that you're bringing to the table for your clients, and keeping them all in alignment with that? So in terms of your anthem, are you a, is your company just solopreneur, you're an organization, you have a team, what's tell me a little bit about the two.
Yeah, I've got a co-founder, him and I, we've run all of our companies together. We sold our agency and software platform in 2018, and so we started this in retirement and now have turned it into a fully functional 16-ish person team.
That's brilliant. I'm convinced there's no such thing as retirement for entrepreneurs, especially powerhouses like yourself. It's sort of like, okay, what's the next project? Bring it on, baby.
I mean, boring happens fast. So, and I don't think creators like us as entrepreneurs should be sitting around doing nothing. We need to be active. It's healthy for us.
I never understood the American dream, to be honest with you. Like, retiring and working till you're 65.7 and then retiring and spending wherever it is you spend your god-awful remaining years like doing nothing. I've never really understood that whole idea of like, for me, I don't think that like, I feel like I'm going to be toiling and meddling and experimenting and dabbling into something until somebody puts a knife in me or I fall overboard on the boat. Like, that's pretty much where I think I'm going out.
Yeah, I hope I'm the same way, because just sitting around doing nothing is just seems like an early death to me.
All right. So you had an agency. It was a software agency.
I had a social media reputation agency, and then I built two software platforms to go along with it that our clients utilized. So we had radio stations that used our contest engine that we built. This was early in when Facebook was just getting popular for businesses. And then I had another software platform for car dealerships to get 5-star reviews from their customers.
Damn, girl. What haven't you done so far?
I have actually tried a lot of things. Some things did not work out, and I have really learned I like tech because I can do that from anywhere and I don't need to be in person anywhere. So I've tried a maternity store retail business about 8 months in. I was like, you know what? Nope, not going to be me at all. And then I've also tried a food company, and again, just decided, nope, I am not going to deal with this.
All right,
so I'm going to focus on what I enjoy doing, that I like doing.
So if anybody looks up what an entrepreneur looks like, join into the Branding Laboratory and you will see it right here, front and center, Elaine Boyd. So I find that interesting. In most entrepreneurs that I work with, everybody sort of has an origin story of where they started and a shit ton of failures in the process between where they are now, which is their happy place, and all of the opportunities that they try to experiment and dabble with early on. And so I don't know if that's just sort of like a benchmark of what entrepreneurs do, but I find it fascinating that people are sort of able to create something out of nothing, make pivots, even if that failed, and still finally continue to be persistent about stepping into where they ultimately are. So speaking of which, how did this, you talked about being passionate about and loving what you're doing now, how did all of those things sort of paint the canvas for where you are now to sort of realize, okay, this is what I like doing? Because I have a very similar story to you, and if you'll allow me, I'll share it with you, but I want to hear yours first. So like, you did all these things, they didn't work out, and then suddenly you found like, whoa, this is my mojo. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So whenever I had my company and What I had to do, because we were growing so quickly, even for a bootstrapped company, we got huge automotive contracts early in our business because we were the first ones doing social media for car dealerships. And so we were having to put in operations and keep the team lean at the same time, scaling massively. And so when I got to the point where we were getting acquired, they loved us because of the well-oiled machine that I had created, my business partner and I had created. And so we sold, and then they said, you know, for an additional earnout, would you be willing to stay on for 18 months and come into our org and put all of this in? And that's what we did. And it was brutal. I mean, just absolutely brutal. I don't recommend doing that at all. But what I was naive thinking.
Why?
Well, you're merging two cultures with two founders being in that new culture when they need you out.
I and figured so, that was the case. I wasn't sure if there's something obvious that I wasn't missing. That I was missing.
No, that's what it is. It's really, really difficult. And it's even difficult for the employees because they want what they used to have. They came to work for the company for what you built. And so the employees are torn. And so it's just a real difficult time. But what I learned is not every company does operations and processes. And there's a huge opportunity for that. And that's what I really loved building because I saw what employee happiness looked like when they got to leave work at the end of the day and not have to continue checking their email at 9 p.m. or come in, you know, do things on the weekends. And the lifetime value, we had a 7-year lifetime value of clients. And that's because that was how long we had client, you know, that was when they were still clients when we sold. And so I saw these pieces of what operations did. And so I was like, maybe other businesses need what we did for the company that took us over. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's so fun. And I love doing this and just seeing the positive impact. Processes and workflows don't seem exciting. You know, it seems like a burden to most people, but for the output of what happens and the positive impact it makes on the team and the clients, that is the warm and fuzzy feeling that all these cold things really make out of it. So
my takeaway, if I can unpack that for a second, is that you were sort of tied to the process of delivering something. And in the essence of that, which was starting other companies, you kind of found your happy place, which was, and you didn't even know that that's what you were doing, sort of turns out. Like, you were just sort of organized by nature, it sounds like, right? And because of who you are, you ran your business a type of way. And then you're like, mm-hmm. wait, my type of way can actually work for other people, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of people don't recognize that, which is interesting to me. And no, true story, because I mean, I see this every day. I am a consultant and a coach by trade. And what I see a lot working with my clients is that it's right in front of them what they truly are passionate about, what they're really good at, what differentiates them from everyone else, but they're mm-hmm. not able to see it for some reason. And I didn't understand it for a long time until it dawned on me one day when I was laying on the sofa, not literally, but metaphorically, at my therapist's office, getting my wacko brain sorted out. And I was like, why can't I see any of the stuff that she just eloquently shared with me? And it dawned on me, like, we can't see our own label most of the time because we're actually so familiar with it. It's like, I'm not trying to be terse here, but it's like, you don't really see that you've gained 25 pounds because you see yourself every single day. So when you look in the mirror, you're like, look at me. People be like, your mom sees you for the first time. She's like, honey, I think you've gained a little bit. Are you healthy, son? What's going on? Like, wait, shut up, mom, shut up, wrong. Wait. So it's sort of like, we're like therapists for people. Like, and that's the value of hiring somebody that can see you from the outside in, right?
Yeah. And that was something I didn't appreciate early on in business either, because I had the, I can do everything and I'm smart, so I can figure it all out. And eventually I just got so burnt out that I realized I have things that I'm good at and I have other people that are better at, and that's okay. And I can delegate to them. And that's when I really started to figure out that processes were my jam, because I can have an idea, I can put together an early strategy, and then my team can take it and build the rest of the details that I don't want to be in.
I love that you were able to recognize that. So kudos to you. And so you ended up selling a business in the process of recognizing it and launching something new in retirement, as you put it. Tell me a little bit about what that looks like. So I'm an organization. I hire you. Which one of the two companies between the two are the process systematization of the two?
Workday Ninja would be the service side that we're working on.
I find you and I call Workday Ninja and I was like, we're just a clusterfuck over here. Clean us up. Tell me, what does that actually look like? What is your process, if you can, customer journey?
Yeah, we'll do it real quick. So, you know, the first step is, do you know which workflows or what is the biggest roadblock right now? And we can start there. Sometimes the client doesn't know and they're like, it's just freaking chaos. And I don't even know where to start. So we'll do a priority impact report with their team to figure out what are the biggest things affecting your team. And we'll start there. And then we start mapping out, okay, well, what's the current process? And that can be where you just shoot Loom videos and just walk us through what your current process is. And we'll take that and we actually build a diagram and we get the key stakeholders, the people that are part of the process, because you forget how many pieces there are and things that are so second nature to you that you forget to put in the process, you just do it. And so we get a couple of people's feedback on it. And then from there, we're able to build the future state. Where can templates be created for this? Do you have a new client onboarding template? Great, we're gonna create one in your work management system, like Asana, ClickUp, or Monday, whatever it is. We're gonna start building out some templates. We're gonna make some automation happen so that if you've got a marketing video and you have a different editor than you have as a content writer, then when it moves into the next stage of the process, it's auto gonna assign a subtask to each of these people. So we start putting together a future state of what things can look like. And then we build a proof of concept in the project management system, or if it's an outside automation, we build like what it could look like.
Like a hypothetical.
Yeah, hypothetical. This is what we're thinking that it can work. And in real life, you know, we're using the system so they could see it work. And then from there, once it gets approved, then we start putting their information into that workflow and they can start using it in real life.
Oh, wow. So that's sort of like a beta model, just to sort of case study it out or just test out the hypothetical. Is that what I'm hearing?
The point of kind of, yes, because you have a proof of concept that's built in their systems that they can just see and visualize and say, yeah, I think this is going to work. And then when we put it in there, there's always going to be a couple of weeks where things, they have a new idea. Like, okay, you know what? We thought we were going to want this to work like this in the future state, but this isn't working, or hey, we actually think we could improve it a little bit further. So we'll have a couple of weeks where we're tweaking things and then it's pretty much off to the races. Now you've got a system working for that system.
Got it.
And there's, you know, think about how many processes you have in your company. Yeah. There could be 100.
So within those iterations, how do you avoid scope creep?
Well, the way that we've worked it is, we went to a different model because, of course, like when you're either you're doing billable time or you price out a project, where scope creep happens very quickly on these because people don't realize how much of a process is a process when you're getting started. And so we changed our model. And so now it's a monthly subscription that we do with our clients and we focus on one thing at a time. But as soon as that one thing is done in the month, we start working on the next one. Mm-hmm. And so for small things, we might get 3 or 4 done in a month. For larger projects, it might take the whole month. So we've just defined it like that. And we work in a client portal with our clients. So we're always making sure they know that we need approval for them or that they're waiting on us for a deliverable. And so there's always an open visualization of where we're at in the process.
You'll appreciate this. I am a former Six Sigma Black Belt process re-engineer. And
I do appreciate that.
And project P&P project manager. So in my former world, I worked in that space of trying to help organizations kind of projectize and systematize things. And one of the things that I thought I loved about it actually turned out to be the thing that I liked the least, which was I'm really creative and I love playing in the creative sandbox of things. And I felt stifled by everything being systematized and projectized and, you know, being locked into a plan because, you know, things are iterative and things do change and things do have scope creep. And so but when you work in a large corporation, you sort of get locked and loaded onto something and you can't really deviate it too much because it affects everything. Right. So that being said, in your operational purview, how are you kind of towing the line between enabling a company to still remain nimble and creative and focus on client experience and all these sorts of things while simultaneously systematizing all the stuff that they need to systematize?
Yeah, so that was something I had to learn in my other business. So one of the things, because I'm so system oriented and I like things organized, is that that's the kind of people I would hire. So other people that enjoyed the process. And when we did, when we got acquired and I stayed on, I remember talking to an outside person, you know, they're the people giving us the insights. And I'm like, man, their whole team is chaos. Like it is a shit storm. But they're so creative. And I'm looking at my team and like the complete opposite. And they were like, well, that's because you hire people that like processes. They're hiring people that like to be creative. And so I had to figure out, how do we not overprocess things? Because we need creatives. We had a social media agency. We were creative, right? And so there is a point where you can't overprocess things, because if you overprocess, then everything, you have so much stay in your lane that there's no wiggle room, and nobody feels like they can change the process because it is so much of a burden. So there's ways to do it as where you have guidelines. So, you know, you can have a process where it moves through a workflow, and instead of having everything task oriented, it's more, this is the goal. However you achieve that goal is fine, so that you can stay creative. So for branding, you know, you're going to have an outline, but you have freedom to be creative when you're working with a client on their branding. And so that's where I had to step back and be like, okay, we don't need every detail in here. We just need the goal, and to do enough training with our team that they understand how to implement, but still be creative.
I love that, because I mentioned in the outset of the call, I had somebody come in a few years back to try to organize, because I'm organized, but I'm also a little bit chaotic at times and I end up chasing squirrels, right? And so one of the things that I discovered in my business is that our follow-up communications were sort of falling off, and we were leaving a lot of fruit on the tree that could have been picked and nurtured a little bit better. And so I tried to modernize that and systematize that. But what it turned out to be is it just became like this redundancy system of oversalesy, overly gregarious emails that really weren't part of my vibe or my philosophy. And it ended up pissing off a lot of my clients. And so I just sort of scrapped the whole thing, which is not necessarily the same thing you're doing, but it's an interesting way that you take at it. So if I can just handle some like hypotheticals with you, I'd just be curious how you handle them. So this podcast, for example, we have a really robust system that brings clients into the process. Hopefully you'll agree with that as you were onboarded, outside of the damn host who had to cancel the meeting at the last minute. How would you handle a podcast of this nature in the post-production process of it, in terms of staying in touch with the client, getting them all the materials that they necessarily need? Does your software and your process kind of take that sort of those types of things into consideration?
Yeah, and that can be part of the automation sequence. Like things like that, I think are valuable, because if you don't leave it to automation, a lot of times it doesn't get done.
Yeah.
So I really like in those cases where there is a specific workflow. There's going to be a podcast air date. There's going to be assets that are associated. And I think too, where people get over automated on the process is they just take it and let it be automated fully. But you could have it automated to where it's a draft, and that you have, it's drafted in your email with everything in there, the assets are added, and then you could customize it before sending it. And it's assigned to that person, it's drafted in their email. I love software, so I'm using ClickUp that sends out a notification, puts it in front, which is my email app that I use on top of Gmail. So like all these things can be auto-assigned to the right person, can be drafted from a template and then edited before sending. And that's the piece. That way 90% of the work's done.
What's the software, ClickUp? What are you using that for?
I use ClickUp. It's our project management system, and you can set up workflow automations so that when something moves to a new stage, it could trigger an email. And we use that a lot. For instance, you mentioned that Arvo is also a piece of our company. Arvo is my software platform, and users will sometimes submit feature requests, or even they might have found a bug. And so we use a ClickUp form that they can submit either their idea or a bug they found. And that goes into our roadmap that we can assign priority to. Well, we get their email.
That's what Arvo is. It's like your roadmap software?
No, ClickUp. We use ClickUp as our roadmap. And so when a user fills out our form saying they found a bug in Arvo, that goes into ClickUp. And as that, now it creates a ticket essentially. And when that ticket moves to it's being worked on, it sends an email to let that user know, hey, the bug you found is now being worked on. So that's really valuable. That lets the person know, you know, hey, this you were listened to and now we're working on it. But I don't feel like I need something super custom for that. You know, that can be a scripted email. And then when it goes live on the site, they get another email saying, hey, thanks so much for suggesting this. We've made it now and the feature is live.
Got it. That's kind of cool. I'm going to check that out, the ClickUp piece. What is Arvo? Tell me, you said it's your software, but you haven't told us exactly what Arvo is.
So what I found through going through process and documentation with clients is that there's also a piece where they need to describe the process, right? There's, like I mentioned, like, what's the goal? Like, what are we trying to achieve? That can be, you know, why we're doing something, how we do it, maybe the specific steps. Mm-hmm. And so we were creating this documentation for clients. And their biggest complaint is like, nobody's reading this stuff anymore. It's all in documents. It's black and white text. Like nobody reads anymore. And after we kept hearing this and hearing this from so many engagements all around the world, we created Arvo, and it's for creating knowledge-based materials, assets, upskilling, how-to docs in a digital format that is skimmable. You can embed things really easily, like how-to videos, Loom videos, that does not look like a boring black and white text document. It's colorful. You can brand it to your colors.
Wow.
People, you know, because they go from their phone, yeah, where it's super engaging, and then they go to work and it's like, no, their attention span is too low for that style now. So that's why we created Arvo.
You know what I always thought, and maybe Arvo does this, so just tell me to shut up if it does, but I always thought would be, and if you like this idea and you run with it, I want in on the business. I always thought it'd be really cool to have some sort of a device that monitors or records all the things that we do on a daily basis, right? And takes all that information, because there's all kinds of stuff that happen, whether they're email templates that are going back and forth, whether they're customer interactions, whether they're operational things, whether they're writing out spreadsheets, whether they're accounting, whatever it is, and takes all of those things in it every single day. And at the end of the day, it gives you a recap of all the things. Like, it just spits out, here's everything that happened today. These are the summaries of emails. These are the action items. These are things that are due, whatever it is, right? But it also at the same time takes all that information and it perpetually indexes it. So at the end of a week or at the end of a month or end of a quarter, whatever it is, you have all this information that you can sort of sort and filter and drop down and drag to kind of get a snapshot of all the things that happened during that month, deliverables, takeaways, whatever it is, right? And then what's even cooler about it is what you were just saying, it takes all the things that happen in that snapshot, right? And it indexes it. So if there are opportunities for like learned behaviors that you need to pass on to somebody else in your office, or you need to share with somebody else, like a Loom video, it takes all that stuff and Dewey Decimal systems it and puts it into some sort of an organization. So like, oh, remember that time I was on that phone with Elaine and we talked about this and I told her how to do this and I gave her a video and I gave her, I can just go quickly pull it down and be like, Melissa, go check it out. This, here it is. Wouldn't that be really cool? Yeah,
that would be awesome. I mean, there's pieces of what you're talking about and a bunch of different software, but nothing that's encompassing at all. And with AI, that is very doable because it could be tracking, reading, summarizing, analyzing. I think there's an opportunity there.
Well, now that I know a software expert, we should have a conversation about this. Yeah. Now you will never retire.
No, why do that?
I'm curious how people kind of become who they are. I'm fascinated by human behaviors and psyches and whatnot. And I'm curious if we may just sort of like take a journey back to young Elaine in terms of how did you become this systematized, organized, anal retentive, whatever person you type of you are, like things have to be orderly and clean and systemized. Like, what was your upbringing? Like, were your parents that way? Were they the opposite of that? And you're like, I'm never going to be this way. Like, what was that?
No, you know, in my personal life, like I have to hire help to keep my personal life organized.
No, don't
like
say
the
it.
House and everything.
No. Like,
yes. Like if it is planning for our life, I'm very organized. I've got it all dialed in online. But if it's my desk, my house, like all of that, I have to hire help. I can't do it. And growing up, that's what it was, just like chaos in our house all the time. And so that's just me at this point. But when it comes to business, I was this morning, I was at a parent association meeting for my child, and they have all these volunteer opportunities. And I was instantly overwhelmed because it is not systemized and organized. And that is the difference. Like in my work life, I get overwhelmed and I need a system to do it. And I also found I can delegate. If it is in a system, I can have somebody else do it. And that was a big turning point in my professional life to where I changed and said, you know what? I don't need to know everything. I don't want to know everything. I can delegate this. I can record a video. I can write it out, whatever it is. And that was my change.
That's an interesting observation. First of all, I was going to go back and I thought you were going to say that you signed up for every opportunity there was to volunteer for.
No, I'm like, I left there. I was like, I don't think I can do anything.
I think that early on in my business, when I first became an entrepreneur, I was very similar to what you just said. I was like, it's my business. Come hell or high water, I'm going to do it. Nobody can do it as well as I can. No one's as efficient as I am, blah, 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 right? And, you know, we have these delusions of grandeur about ourselves, and that's how we get burnout, right? But it's really important. I really, truly, no matter if you're a solopreneur, an entrepreneur, or a megalomaniac corporation, it's really important to stay in your lane, isn't it? And find people who are good at what they do. And that's what I've spent the last 7 years of my business is really trying to surround myself with collaborative partners. If it's not something that I don't own or I'm not directly responsible for, I go out and find partners like yourself that I know will handle my clients just like I would, but their core competency is doing what they do, not what I do. So really finding people who are good at what they do and surrounding yourself with people who can fill in some of the gaps where you have a lack. And your software is what you're doing is kind of like that, right? But if you could speak to that for a minute, how important is it to surround yourself with people, partners, collaborators that are really good at what they do so that you can stay in your lane and do what you do really, really well?
Yeah. And I like that you brought that to an externally outside of your team too, so that you're not trying to sell everything to everyone and be a one-stop shop when you have core competencies. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's something that I struggled with because I love selling and I love talking to people and I see opportunity all over the place. And then my business partner's like, no, Elaine, we can't do all of this. Like, let's just stick to what we're good at. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll come back then a little bit. But finding the people, you have to have, I think having chemistry with other partners is really important. Like you said, like the people that are going to treat your clients the same way and even hiring. What I started hiring different personality types. I work really well with architect personality types.
I do as well, by the way. Yeah. I love their quirkiness. They're very quirky.
They are. They're very quirky and they can take what I want and build it out and be so happy. Mm-hmm. They are just like loving life. And then I'm like, oh my God, I didn't have to do all that. And so that's what I've started doing is looking for the personality types that complement me. The ones that annoy me, you know, I have to stay away from if I have to interact with them every day, because then I'm getting more irritated with the personality instead of the work. And that's not a good combination for me. And with partners, I need a similar, I'm not having them do a personality test, but I need people that I can jam with because my clients, if I'm bringing them on, they're coming on because they like me and my energy or my team's energy. I'm responsible for hiring my team. And I need the same thing in a partner.
Yeah.
If we're clashing, then my clients are going to clash with them.
I can't nod my head fast enough in agreement with that. And I want to break that down a little bit more because I think it's worth noting, especially we have a lot of early entrepreneurs who listen to this show. It's really, really important. And I think I'm on my fourth business now. So I've been involved in a few things like you. My first business, which I sold, I was really kind of just eager to take on anyone and everybody. Like, I will do whatever you want. Like, no matter what it is, I'll work with you. And a couple of things happened in that process. A, I got completely oversaturated. B, I had no idea what my core competencies were anymore and what I really loved doing because I was just doing all sorts of things and not paying attention to them. I just became like repetitively autonomous, right? And C, I found really quickly that nobody really knew what I did, like what was my true value to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so I had buyer confusion. And so it wasn't until I figured that piece out and sort of realized that not everybody is my client, not every project is my project, and certainly not every personality is my personality. So I want to just talk about that for a second, because you said a few things that really kind of resonated with me. When a client is hiring you in that sales process, I think it's fucking one of the most important things, and I dropped an F-bomb on purpose, so now I have to say this podcast is mature. it's really freaking important that you are also hiring them, not just they hiring you. Because if you're going to get in bed with this person, you sure as hell better have chemistry. You sure as hell better be able to, when the thick and thin of things come to wear and tear, you're able to collaborate cohesively, collaboratively, and beneficially for both parties. Because if you're, and I've done this before, I've been in bed, literally and metaphorically, with people that I just didn't vibe with. And I was like, I have no idea how to fucking navigate this, okay? Like, I just don't know where to go. I'm just not into you anymore. And as a client, get your mind out of the gutter.
I know. I think it's just, I love this energy.
As a client, when you're working with somebody and the two of you are like nothing but like, what are two chemicals that just don't go well together? Oil and water? Is that the person
that came to mind.
Yeah, man. It's like everything comes to buds. Everything comes to head. Everything is like a conversation that is just a waste of time and waste of drama. They're never happy with anything you do. You're never happy with anything. Like, why would you even sign up for that in the first place? But I think we forget. Sorry, I'm going somewhere with all this. As early entrepreneurs as just entrepreneurs in general, we're so vested and invested in making our business work that we forget how fundamentally it is important that we're hiring the right type of people to work with.
Yeah. And I think too, with being early in business, because you're trying to figure out, you know, what are clients going to buy and what gives value and what do you enjoy doing? And there's been things where we've sold things and brought on clients. And then we realized we don't like those type of clients and we don't like doing this type of work. Mm-hmm. And I think firing clients has become like a buzzword, which is super aggressive to me, but you can sunset services. You can say we're no longer offering these services. And that has been super powerful because that 80-20 rule where, you know, 80% of your time goes 20% of your clients.
Pareto.
If they are not great clients, it's okay to sunset those services and move on.
I've not heard that before. And I didn't know that firing clients was the cool thing to do. I didn't realize that was a thing.
I feel like it's like the thing that people like fire clients. Like, well, you know, you got to make ends meet, but you can start sons. I like to say like, hey, we're no longer going to be offering this. You give them 60 days. Like, hey, we're no longer offering this service. If you want to move to one of our other packages and you increase the price a lot so that it's a barrier.
I like that.
And then it's easy because they have 60 days to go find a new vendor and you're just letting them know this isn't going to be what I'm doing any longer. And they have the choice. Either I'm going to pay three times as much and I'm going to change what I'm doing, or I'm going to go find somebody else.
Speaking of somebody else, who else do you compete with in this marketplace? What makes your solution different from theirs? Whether it's more qualified, more unique, what is your value proposition against anyone else who's doing similar to you?
So for Workday Ninja, we really specialize in ClickUp, Asana, and Monday at our core. And then we build on top of that. So Pipedrive and HubSpot, CRMs, Close, CRMs. And so we have this certain tech stack that we really focus on. And what we're determining now is we're not just certified and experts in these software platforms. We are experts in building a workflow with these systems. It's one thing to know functionality, but it's another to build a system with it. And that, from running my company for 12 years doing social media management, we had 600 active clients. We wrote 1,200 social media posts per week.
Wow.
And so we understood, okay, this is how you build a system. So I think with the background that we have, and we've gotten into these other popular work management systems as they've gotten larger and more popular. But that's really the difference, is I'm not just coming in as an expert in these systems. I'm an expert in building a team using these and how to build a process. And that's where the difference with the competitors are. Many of them have not built a 125 person agency using these platforms. They've become an expert in the system and then offering knowledge on that system. So that's the biggest differentiator. And then with my software, we have lots of competitors, but we're the only one that is not doing it in a black and white text format that looks like a glorified Google Doc.
You are like Lego and Build-A-Bear for businesses. All in one.
It's super fun too, just like Legoland and Build-A-Bear.
I saw Lego and Nike just signed a contract. I'm a huge shoe whore. I love shoes, and which is ironic because I'm barefoot like 75% of the time. But one of my shoes, true story, I'm going to show them to you right now just because I've always wanted to have a pair of Jordans.
Oh man, those look awesome. And they look so brand new.
They are brand new. And I always wanted to have a pair of Jordans as a kid, but I was like dirt poor and my parents never bought me a pair of shoes. My first pair of shoes was when I went to college. True story. My football coach picked me up at the airport, took me down to the college, dropped me off. And then I was like, bro, I have no cleats. Like, I have literally no cleats. And so all I have is like these 10-year-old shoes that my brother, who was 10 years older than me, wore. So he bought me my first pair of brand new shoes.
Oh my
Anyway,
gosh.
I always wanted to have a pair of Jordans. And now my daughter has like seven pairs of Jordans. And I was like, why am I not buying myself my first pair of Jordans? I've got money. My kid is taking all my money for the Jordans. I'm going to buy myself a pair. So anyway, where I was going with that, sorry. I saw that, speaking of Legos, Nike and Air Jordan just signed a contract with Lego to build Nike shoe Legos. How freaking cool is
That's
that?
so cool. I
I
love
know.
those collaborations like
I
that.
do. Tell
It's
me a
like
little bit of.
Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart, like two worlds coming together to build an audience.
Wait, is that really happening?
I mean, Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart do all kinds of stuff together.
I'm so
They were
outside
just
of
at the
popular.
Olympics together and at an equestrian thing.
I knew Snoop was. I didn't know Martha was.
She showed up and they did a whole equestrian thing together, and she's so classy. And I like their story just because that's two different worlds coming together and just showing, like, hey, Lego and Nike have a place.
I
Martha and
love it.
Snoop Dogg, they have a place together.
I
So.
love it. What are some of the biggest challenges you face as being a new entrepreneur in this new operation you're running? What are some of the how has the market shifted from the first company you ran to this one you're doing now? What are some of the big challenges you face?
I talk about this all the time with my business partner. Things are so much harder now than they were 13 years ago for marketing and sales. I mean, it was so easy because we were at a time in our transition as a human population where social media was just getting really, really popular for businesses and leaving radio. So businesses that would advertise on radio were looking for a new place because Spotify was coming out and Apple Music wasn't out yet, but people were just listening to music on their devices rather than radio. And so getting clients and selling was so much easier. Now, so much more effort has to be put on this and having a personal brand and talking about yourself and talking about you as an expert and less emphasis on just your company. You need to have your company brand and your personal brand, and they need to be united in some way. And so I feel like I'm talking about myself more than I've ever been comfortable with.
So you're having to get over your imposter syndrome.
Yeah, imposter syndrome, like laziness on talking about myself. Like, why do I don't want to have to do a video and I don't want to have to do this. And it's like, no, Elaine, you do have to do these things if you want to keep having a business.
Well, if I may, shameless plug, that's why I do what I do, because I got into this business in my own experience, like yours. I realized that there was a need for people like me and my skill sets to help solve a problem for people like you who are busy with running their business. They've got a team, whatever it is you're doing of just running your business. But in today's marketplace, you have to have a different kind of presence than you had to have 10 years ago because there's a lot more people doing the same thing you're doing. First of all, the market is
Yes.
oversaturated. But most importantly, people's attention spans have diminished greatly in the last 10
So
years. And
much.
so yeah, so we have so much information, and I'm actually doing a keynote on this next week. We have so much information at our disposal now that we have information overload, and our
Yeah.
brains cannot process or retain or hold on to and understand not so much the sense of urgency, but like, what's the application of this for me? Why do I care? Because I'm just going to thumb on to the next one, right? I'm just going to go to the next one, I'm going to go to the next one, I'm going to go to the next one, right? So I built my business on being able to help people like you do this very thing, which is build your personal brand and connect with the right type of audience. So in the sense of what you're doing now versus what you did 10 years ago, what are some of the biggest challenges you've seen in terms of, is it social media? Is it website? Is it getting your a public persona on you? What is it you see most challenging?
I see getting your name out and getting seen, I think, is one of the hardest things. Like having the number of people now that you need to reach out to, I feel like is greater. And then back then, podcast wasn't a thing, or it was so early stage, it wasn't mainstream like it is now. And so having now to split time on marketing, whereas before you did some cold calls, you did some emails, you did some social media. Okay, you're gonna get a good, nice client base. Now you need to be sending 1,000 emails a day, finding the right taglines to get people to open, to get people to click. You need to be doing webinars, talking about what you're doing. You've got to be seen as an expert. And at the same time, you got to make sure you're still running your company and that you're training your team and they know how to do everything. And so, like, I feel about the number of things I do in a day now is very different than the number of things that I did before.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. Well, this has been a fun conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. Before you go, is because we're running up against our, wow, we're almost at an hour. Good. Well, Jesus, good conversations. What? Yeah, we're at 51 here. I've tried to keep this around 30, 45 minutes, but it's just impossible to do because there's just so many cool things to discuss. But before you go, if I may, if you had to sort of encapsulate who you are right now versus who you were a few years ago, what are the two sort of like slogans or visions of the two different people?
I would say I'm more focused and clarified in what I want to do. You know, 5-10 years ago, I was a lot more just whimsical about what I wanted to do and how I was going to get there. And now it's like, no, I'm clear. And this is what I like to do. I'm not going to go try other businesses, do other things. This is what I love doing.
My takeaway from that is that you're very purpose-driven and it's really important to have sort of an understanding and clarity around that if you want to operate efficiently and effectively.
Yeah. And this is why you're the branding expert, because you can take all the jibble jabble that I say and turn that into something amazing.
Well, I just set you up for that one. So thank you. Really appreciate it.
I had that as a note to say, and now I've accomplished that.
Yeah. Brilliant. What does Elaine's billboard say?
She is on fire.
Wow. I was having this conversation with a podcast guest a few shows ago, and I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Where are you? You're in Florida?
I'm in Boulder, Colorado right now.
Why do I think you're in Florida? Were you in Florida before?
No, I sometimes I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
For some reason, maybe. I thought you were Florida. Forgive me. My family lives in Colorado. I was actually born in Colorado.
Wow.
I was born in Colorado Springs. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, but I have family in Fort Collins. So
I love Fort Collins. We almost went there instead of Boulder.
I was just out there at Christmas time. It's too cold out there for me. I don't like it.
It is cold.
And there's no trees. It's just like prairies and deserts, and it's just not my vibe. Anyway, no offense. But we were having this conversation about billboards, and I used to date somebody in Hilton Head many years ago, and I would drive from Charlotte to Hilton Head. It's like a four-hour drive. And if you've ever done the drive in the South, I don't know if you've driven in the South anywhere. You've been in Nashville, so you know. There's fucking billboards everywhere. Like, I don't even understand billboards. Everywhere. So I used to do this thing where I would take snap photographs of billboards, and then I would do like this little thing on Instagram and break down the messaging on it and just be like, what was this dude thinking? He was definitely on a crack pipe when he came up with this idea. But then I was like, what would my billboard say? So I was like to ask people, what would your billboard say? So I love that. So that's where that
goes. What would your billboard say?
I have several billboards, but I think probably the one I would go with the most would be candid, raw, and true.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, because I don't have a filter, and that gets me into a lot of trouble sometimes. But yeah,
I feel that pain.
But I tell this to my wife all the time. I'm like, I would rather you insult me and tell me the truth than candy coat it and make me have to find out that everything you said was superficial. Like, I don't have time for any of that stuff. Like, let's just call it what it is. Like, we should all wear name tags on what we're feeling that day when we go out in public. Don't fucking come near me right now. I'm pissed, right? I need a hug, whatever it is. Like,
I don't know if I need a tag on me that says, leave me alone, I'm fucking pissed. But because I think it's pretty apparent on my face. I'm not great at hiding emotions at all.
Well, I don't know. All the photographs we have of you are always smiling. So, because I've seen two of you. It was on your website and then something you submitted for the podcast. So anyway. Yeah. Well, we covered some really cool stuff today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about your business and your approach and your philosophies and all the different things. And how can people find you? What's the best way to connect with you?
I am on LinkedIn, and connect with me, Elaine Boyd. And I'm super responsive on there, and I'd love to connect.
Elaine spelled, by the way, for those of you who don't know how to spell, it's A-L-A-N-E, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she has a unique spelling, so just check her out. I don't like LinkedIn. I haven't figured it out yet, so I'm going to follow you. If you have some secrets, help me.
Okay.
Are you on Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, I am on Instagram. It's the _HurricaneElaine.
Oh, there you go. That's where the billboard comes from. Okay, cool. Well, I really appreciate it. If you, for those of you who are listening to the show, do not forget to subscribe so that you can hear more fantastic guests like Elaine every single week. Leave us a review. We love our feedback. We want to know how to improve the show. Please do the same thing, Elaine. If you liked your experience with us, I would appreciate if you would document that for posterity. If you'd like to connect with us on social media, I am at Devo, the brand storyteller, on Instagram, as well as LinkedIn. Until next time, I'm Devo, the brand storyteller. This is Elaine Boyd with Workday Ninja and Arvo, two companies. We're grateful that you joined us today on the Branding Laboratory. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.